Well, I've watched my share of scary movies, and I realize one of the themes of especially cheesy scary movies is there's always someone wanting to go into a dark room. Have you ever noticed that? There's no explanation here, okay? There's a dark room, there's a dark stairwell, there's a dark cellar, there's a dark closet, and some idiot in the movie is always wanting to go in there and say, I wonder what's in here. And so you think, as you're sitting there watching that movie, this is just crazy. Just stay out of the darkness. That's all it takes. There's bad things in the darkness. Everyone knows that. Everyone sitting in the theater knows that, right? So stay in the light. Well, because in the light you can see things, and there's safety, and there's protection. That might be a silly scenario because, well, it's not real. But what if indeed it was real? What if people really were going into the darkness and walking out of the light and then facing awful consequences for going into that darkness? I would propose to you that in a spiritual context that this does happen, that people do choose to go into the darkness. Even Christians choose to go into the darkness, leaving the light, walking blindly into the darkness, and thinking something to the effect of, you know what, I think I can do this. There must be something here that I haven't found before, or maybe something that I did find before that I really liked, and I think I'm going to go find it again. We just talked this morning in 1 John chapter 1, verse 5, that God is light. And if we walk in the light of God, then we'll abide in the love of God, which we'll talk about next week, the love of God. And these are the best decisions that we can make, to abide in his light and to abide in his love. But just because God is light, and just because we are the light of the world, doesn't mean everyone is drawn to God, or to us, or to our message. Many people are more attracted to darkness than light. Look around in the world, and that's exactly what you'll see. More people attracted to darkness than to light. In fact, the darkness of the world is actually favored over the light of the world. And that begs the question, why would someone actually turn away from the light for something that Christ wants to save us from? The fact that we need to be saved from the darkness means that that darkness is not harmless. It is not without consequences. People lose their souls in the darkness. Not a single person in all of history has ever lost his soul walking in the light. Just think about that scenario right there. Everyone who walks in darkness will lose their soul if they stay there. But no one has ever lost their soul walking in the light of God. And yet, having said all that, there must be reasons why people choose darkness over light. Not just those unbelievers out there who are unconverted and have never obeyed the gospel, but Christians as well. Why would they do such a thing? And that is the scope of this lesson here tonight. The light, of course, as we talked about this morning, indicates something beneficial, something positive, obviously something useful. The darkness is the absence of light. As I said this morning, it has no definition on its own. I use the illustration of going into a well-lit room and turning off all the lights. You're not creating darkness because the darkness is simply the absence of the light. So in other words, the only way to describe darkness is through an absence of something good. But whenever we describe light, either we define or necessarily imply a source of that light, because light doesn't just happen by itself. There's always a source. And in our physical world, it might be the sun or fire or some artificial form of light like we're enjoying right now in incandescent bulbs or fluorescent bulbs or whatever's being used today. In the spiritual realm, this also is true. Satan operates in, we're told in Colossians 1:13, which we read this morning, in a domain of darkness. But you have to understand that Satan is not the source of darkness. It's not something he created on his own. He doesn't have that kind of power. Rather, he and his domain are separated from God's light. That's why he's in the darkness, is because he is separated from God's light, because God is the ultimate source of all spiritual light. I'd like you to read with me, as we did this morning in 1 John. I was going to read it here, but I posted it up here on the screen anyway, so it makes it easier. John says, "The one who says he is in the light and yet hates his brother is in the darkness until now. The one who loves his brother abides in the light, and there is no cause for stumbling in him. But the one who hates his brother is in the darkness and walks in the darkness and does not know where he is going, because the darkness has blinded his eyes." As we said, You cannot walk in darkness and light all at once. It's like saying you're with God and not with God all at the same time. It's not only impossible in theory, it is impossible in practice. Here's another way of looking at it, a little bit more brief, succinct. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 10, verse 21, he says, you cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of demons. You cannot partake of the table of the Lord and the table of demons. I want you to think about the table he's referencing here is really the Lord's Supper. What he's saying then is you cannot celebrate the death of Christ and all that that means and all that it implies and then go out and live a life that really is the cause for this death in the first place. In other words, live a life that contradicts that celebration. We celebrate the death of Christ because it means something to us, because it does something for us, because it does something for our future. How can we go out and live in the darkness when that is the opposite of all of that celebration? So imagine a Christian, for example, drinking from the table here. That is, in other words, partaking of the Lord's Supper and then drinking from the cup of demons throughout the rest of the week. That just doesn't make sense. And yet, when we do walk with God in His light, there's a number of priceless and extremely beneficial results. I'm just going to list them very quickly here because you probably already know this, but I just want to bring your attention to them. First of all, God always seeks our best interests, always meets our spiritual needs over time. The darkness never seeks your best interests. The darkness only seeks to destroy you. God never betrays us, never leaves us, never abandons us, never deceives us. The darkness doesn't care, however, about your spiritual well-being. In fact, the darkness will abandon you after it has destroyed you. Jesus Christ is our friend, our Savior, our advocate, which means that He speaks on our behalf and defends our souls. Satan, on the other hand, is described as a roaring lion seeking to devour and destroy your soul. Jesus Christ is our shepherd and our protector, and we're able to entrust our souls to Him, and He is both willing and able to defend us and protect us. Satan, on the other hand, couldn't care less about who you are. He doesn't care about your name. He doesn't care about what's special or personal to you. He doesn't care what's important to you. He just wants to destroy you in order to get back at God. Jesus Christ is the Holy Spirit, rather, is our guide and our governor of our spiritual life. Everything pertaining to life and godliness is given to us by Him. Satan, on the other hand, is hell-bound, and he wants you to be as well. In Christ, we have forgiveness, we have access to the Father, we have prayers answered, we have spiritual blessings, we have the hope of heaven. In the darkness, you have no forgiveness, no access to God, no prayers are answered, there are no blessings, and there is no hope. That's amazing when we put it just such glaring contrast like that. We're looking at a very positive, very good, very beneficial list, and then the diametrically opposed opposite of all that in the darkness. This is impressive to see this. And if the good list is so good, is my whole point here, if that is so good, and yet people still turn away from that or resist it altogether, then we can only conclude one thing at least, and that is that the darkness is extremely cunning and deceptive and attractive as a force. And that is exactly what we're getting at. It's an extremely attractive and powerful force. The power of darkness is real. It is a force to be reckoned with. Satan himself is intelligent, and he is relentless. He will not give up quickly or easily. His influence is everywhere. He has sown the seeds of potential rebellion in the heart of every single believer. And what I mean by that is that any person at any time could fall. It doesn't matter how strong they are now, the potential for rebellion is ever present. Satan stands ready to take advantage of every moral weakness. It doesn't matter who you are, or how long you've been going to church, or how long you've been a Christian, or how well you've been teaching others, or how helpful you've been in the kingdom. It really doesn't matter. He is ready to take advantage of your moral weakness at any time. And in doing so, he feeds your doubts, he feeds your fears of every disciple and even every would-be disciple, causing every single person to second guess or wonder if this is the right decision or somehow wonder if there isn't a better decision to make instead of serving God. Let me just say it this way, that Satan is the complacency of every idle Christian. He is the procrastination of every good intention. He is the compromise of every spiritual commitment. He is the proud boast of every humble act of kindness. He is the spirit of self-reliance in every prayer of supplication to God. He is all those things. And the fact, and this is kind of disturbing to even say it this way, the fact is that he is at work right now, convincing some, perhaps listening to this lesson, thinking in their heart, this lesson doesn't apply to me. I don't need this information. I'm too smart for that. I'm too strong to resist. I will never fall. Or the ever famous, you don't understand card. As if me not understanding your situation justifies perhaps you walking in the darkness. The gospel of Christ exposes the darkness for what it is. It is a message filled with lies and deceit and propaganda. We should not be ignorant of Satan's schemes, we are told. And therefore, God expects all people, especially all Christians, to exercise wisdom and discernment, to examine the facts, and of course, weigh the evidence. We know, not just intuitively, but through the Bible record here, we know that God's power is infinitely greater than the power of darkness. And yet, we also see that Satan is enjoying many easy successes and painless victories. Many have succumbed to his lies and his deceptions. And you say, how does he do that? And here's a little secret, and it's a secret that's really not so secret if you think about it. The little secret is this, and that is that Satan knows our human weaknesses and our desires often far better than we do, and he exploits those weaknesses for his gain. He knows what makes you tick. He also knows what makes you fall. He knows what you like. He knows what you don't like. He knows your strengths. He also, more importantly, knows your weaknesses. We have said before in other lessons that Satan is a meticulous observer of human behavior. That doesn't mean just human behavior in the most general sense. That means he's a meticulous observer of your human behavior as well. There's no record that Satan can read your mind, but he does watch everything you do, and he watches you all the time, even when you think he's not. Many Christians, therefore, make themselves unsuspecting victims because they make themselves very vulnerable to those attacks and because they do not take his threat very seriously. We have no excuse to be ignorant or uninformed, and to educate ourselves, we need to understand some of the reasons why people do choose the darkness. So I'm just going to go through some major points here in the rest of the lesson. First of all, as you see on your handout there, people have a fondness for the darkness. We read this morning in John chapter 3, verse 19 and 20, it says that the light has come into the world. This is Jesus talking. And yet he says, but men loved the darkness. There's a phrase there you should not overlook lightly. Loved the darkness. This is not just a casual interest. This is not just a temporary distraction. I mean, if you love something, then you're drawn to it. I mean, you're enticed by that. If you love something, you want to spend time with it. If you love someone, you want to spend time with them and get to know them better. And if you love the darkness, then you're going to want to spend time in the darkness. You're going to want to get to know that darkness a little bit better. I mean, I want you to think about what Jesus has said to us. There's something about the darkness that the proud, selfish human spirit craves and adores and, yes, even worships. The darkness has a tantalizing, mesmerizing, captivating pull to it. There is a strange, shall we say, giddy attraction, an excitement of the taboo. I think all of us have experienced that on one level or another. I think we all know what we're talking about. And left to ourselves, people are pleasure seekers. People just want to relax. They just want to take it easy. They just want to have fun. People, more often than not, just do not want to be concerned about their duty to God and responsibility toward their fellow man or their spiritual needs. I mean, think about it. If you were to say to someone, hey, I've got a two-hour movie, and you know, it's in a genre that person really likes, and would you come over to my house and sit here for the next 2 hours and watch this movie with me? You probably get a whole bunch of takers on that, right? Especially if you threw in a little bit of treats and popcorn or whatever else. A lot of people like to do that sort of thing. If you were to ask those same people, hey, would you want to sit down for a 30-minute Bible study with me and pray together to our God? You might get the, whoa, what now? I'm sorry, 30 minutes? That's a long time. And I don't know if my schedule will allow that. I've got things to do. I'm really busy. And of course, I'm exaggerating that maybe to some extent, but that is kind of how people react to the things that are important versus the things that are not. The darkness does not care if you get a little religion now and then. It doesn't care if you go to church. It doesn't care if you sing songs, and doesn't care if you take the Lord's Supper. As long as you always reserve a certain fondness and affection and affinity for the darkness. The darkness always is there to take you back, always there to go back to. And the darkness is not quiet, sitting there with its hands folded, just waiting for you to, you know, come back to it. The darkness is calling you. You know what I'm talking about. Many of you know exactly what I'm talking about. The darkness is calling you. The darkness is beckoning you. The darkness is enticing you and tempting you, and shall I say, even seducing you into coming back to it. The darkness, after all, presents itself as your best friend, the one friend, if you remember some of what Daryl said in his lesson on addiction, the one friend that will never leave you, never betray you, never let you down, always be there for you. It always stands ready for you to come back to it so that you can return to and restore your relationship with it at any time. Such is the darkness, just very much like addictive behavior itself, creating a very powerful and very intoxicating relationship. We're told by Jesus himself, Matthew 6:24, you can't love the darkness and love Christ at the same time. Remember what he said, men love the darkness, and then Jesus says, you need to love me. So a choice has to be made. And that leads to a second reason for people's choosing the darkness over light. A second motive would be familiarity. People continue to love the darkness because they become extremely comfortable with the darkness. Some of you know, my family knows for certain, that I have gone on coffee fasts in the past, and everyone's like, don't do that ever again. Please don't do that ever again. Okay? And they're getting at the idea that I get a little grumpy, as if, right? But it wasn't really what I found the loss of coffee that bothered me so much. In other words, it wasn't the liquid substance itself. It was the cup in my hand. It was the coffee shop that I went to. It was the social setting that people engage in when they drink coffee. That's what I missed the most. In other words, there was a comfortable context, a comfortable, familiar environment in which I found myself often in order to drink the coffee. Now, I'm making a light illustration there, but you could take it to a very serious level. When a preacher, for example, says something audacious like, hey, we all need to be involved. We all need to be involved in the Lord's work, and we need to make some changes and so on. Some people, some Christians, will cringe at that, not because they disagree, not because they disapprove, but because many are so entrenched in the familiar ways and habits and customs of the darkness that what I say or what the preacher says sounds so jarring, so unfamiliar, so in conflict with how they are living right now, that they just don't want to accept that. Some of you know about my brother Tracy. He was an alcoholic, had been an alcoholic for a long time. How much of this do I want to say? He attempted suicide in the early 2000s. He was in Seattle going through reconstructive surgery because of the attempt. I met him in Seattle. He was in a very dark place. And he started talking to me. We had a long talk. And he started talking to me about what he was going through. And I was talking to him about where he needed to be. He was talking about the darkness of addiction and alcoholism and all those things. And I was talking about the grace of God, the love of God, and where his soul could be if he would just listen. And he kept saying to me, "You don't understand. You don't understand what I'm going through," which is true. I didn't understand. But I turned it around. I said, "Well, Tracy, you don't understand what I'm talking about either," which is true. He didn't understand. The point I'm making is that neither side really understood fully the other side. But the whole point I'm making, too, is that he was so caught up with the familiarity of his darkness that he just couldn't possibly conceive of getting out of that darkness and leaving that behind. And that was just a sad discussion. So you might find yourself in that situation, especially even talking to Christians. Some Christians are scared of the light because they're unaccustomed with the light and actually afraid of what it requires. Christ is not looked upon as a friend. He's looked upon as a stranger. And for me to leave my darkness, even though I would never call it that, or, you know, my addiction, or you know, my lifestyle, and fully engage in a relationship with Jesus Christ instead of the very well-known relationship I've developed with the darkness, that just sounds so foreign to some people. Which leads to the next discovery. That is that people love the darkness and are comfortable with it because it offers something that the light cannot, and that is concealment. We're told again in John 3, verse 19 through 20, that the light exposes, the light uncovers, the light reveals the truth about the world, about God, about Satan, even about ourselves. The darkness offers protection and secrecy, or at least so we think. It offers a chance to avoid responsibility and to avoid accountability. It offers an opportunity to not have to work so hard, but to take the easy path instead. And that allows for a lot of people a double life. I want you to imagine a Christian, for example, who attends services with faithful men and women, listens to sound biblical teaching over and over, sings songs of praise and worship and commitment, leads everyone to think very well of him, and then when he leaves the building, he re-enters his private world of darkness, which is his real world, which is the world that he actually operates in, because this is stepping out of that world for just a little while so that he can go back into that later. And he thinks to himself, "No one knows." Well, that is not true. Actually, the fruit will bear itself out. People will know. People often do know. And God most certainly always knows. The darkness allows us somewhere to hide so that we can do what we really want to do and not what we have to do or feel obligated to do. It is important to know this next point as well, that not only do people enjoy what they do in the darkness, but once they are there, they rarely ever accuse others who are also in the darkness of what they are doing. There seems to be an unspoken camaraderie, an unholy fellowship, some kind of wicked support group that people in the darkness all have with one another. Christians who are faithful to God, Christians who are seeking to become stronger in the faith and taking the gospel seriously, those people will choose the company of other faithful and authentic Christians. But those who are living a double life and want to remain undetected and unexposed, they will avoid those same people. And so their guilt drives a wedge between them and the faithful Christians in their lives. I know that you have seen this. I am certain that you have seen this. You have experienced this. There might be even some here who are actually in that scenario that I just described. Those who want to remain concealed will often seek the company not of faithful men and women, but with others who are living the same kind of double life that they are living, often with the very same behaviors, and neither one will draw attention to the other. Both of them walking hand in hand, so to speak, on the wide path that leads to destruction. Which leads to the final observation, at least for this lesson, and that is that the darkness promises much and demands very little or nothing because it is the path of least resistance. The darkness does not force us to give up our pleasures or our contentment or our complacency or our procrastination. In fact, it allows people to indulge in all of those things. Fill your bellies, fill your mind with whatever you want to. It is the easy life. I mean, let's just face it. How hard is it, after all, to miss services? How hard is it to forego the Lord's Supper, which Jim talked about this morning? How hard is it to ignore the warnings of lessons after lesson? and to avoid being with fellow Christians? How hard is it to be silent about your alleged faith? How hard is it to copy the behavior of worldly friends and family? The answer to all those is not at all. It's not hard at all, because it is the path of least resistance. It is the path that most people will take, left to themselves without divine influence. So to choose light and to choose life, we have to give up the darkness. And the cost of doing so and the psychological effect of doing so appears to someone to be overwhelming. Those who are addicted to the life of darkness, and don't think that you have to have an addiction, you can be addicted to darkness itself. Those who are addicted to the life of darkness cannot imagine life without that addiction. They might give it up for a little while, but they will not give it up forever. Jesus promises strength. He promises the Holy Spirit and guidance with that Spirit, but this is not going to happen until that person gives his or her consent. And this is why many people will not consent, because to make that decision, to make that commitment there, requires great concentration and great focus and great energy in a completely different direction than going in the darkness, going toward the light instead. It can be difficult. It can be daunting. In some respects, it can actually be frightening, at least at first. Jesus says, focus instead on the rewards, focus on the benefits, focus on the fellowship. The darkness, however, says, you know what? It's just too much pain, it's too much cost, it's too much sacrifice, and you know it. And somehow we naturally agree and are inclined to agree with the darkness, because it's much easier to accept its logic, because it does seem, after all, justifiable if that is what we want. So we rationalize. Remember what I said in my lesson on addiction, is we find ourselves dialoguing with darkness, just like we do with addictions. We should not be talking with the darkness or our addictions ever. The problem with darkness's logic is that it is flawed. It has already been proven wrong. It is filled with lies and half-truths. It has no power on its own, because it relies on you giving power to it. Jesus appeals to us with heavenly logic, godly motives, and selfless, unconditional love. He says to us through the Spirit in Romans 6:23, the wages of sin, which is the darkness and the shadow life, is death, but to choose light is the free gift of God, or leads to the free gift of God. And this is the message we need to share with others and communicate with our lifestyle as well as with our words, that the light in the life, or life in the light, I should say, is the life to choose. Think about what Christ told Paul as he commissioned him as an apostle. He says, your job, if I could say it that way, is to open their eyes so that they may turn from darkness to light and from the dominion of Satan to God, that they may receive forgiveness of sins and an inheritance among those who have been sanctified by faith in me. This is our gospel message. This need still exists. It is real. By dabbling and getting comfortable in the darkness and the shadow life, we are conforming to the dominion of Satan. We threaten all hope of heaven. We jeopardize our own soul. We misrepresent the gospel. There's just nothing good that comes from that. Absolutely nothing good that comes from that. Hopefully this lesson has given all of us some insight or perspective into the motives behind choosing darkness over light, especially on the heels of our lectureship. We know people choose darkness. We know that. All of us have done it so ourselves. There may be some here who are doing it right now. But it also helps us to know why people do so. If you understand the motive behind ours and others' actions, then we will not be so easily deceived ourselves, I would hope. And also we can be able to more easily help those who are being deceived. No one is prepared, of course, to be the light of the world if one's heart is already filled with darkness. Now think about what Jesus said in the reading that Ivan read for us. Jesus says, watch out that the light in you is not darkness. Could put it another way, make sure that the only light that you know isn't actually darkness, which is kind of a paradoxical way of looking at it. Don't allow yourself, in other words, to be deceived. God's light does not allow us anywhere to hide, but confronts us with the truth, not to destroy us, but to bring us to our senses and to so that we would choose life instead. Unlike Satan, God never deceives us. He never tricks us. He never manipulates us or leads us down the path of our own destruction. Darkness, on the other hand, has no objective except to destroy you, and especially by separating you from the light. So if you are a Christian here tonight, then I would strongly urge you to walk as children of light, are supposed to walk. And don't be foolish like those people in the movies who head into the darkness for no good reason when they ought to remain in safety and security of the light. God is light, we are told, and in him there is no darkness at all. Not just a little bit, but there is no darkness in God. And since that is true, and since you know that is true, do not turn away from the light to anything else. That is our lesson tonight. If there's anyone here who is moved by this lesson, by the gospel message, to do something about their life, to make a change, to make a new commitment, to renew their commitment to God, if that is your need tonight, come forward if you need to as we stand and sing the song Richard has selected for us.